Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. Fast-paced delivery that's sure to knock you for six with former England opening batsman. This is Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup Show on Love Sport.
What a great morning it is. Yes, a complete washout yesterday. Sri Lanka versus Bangladesh. No cricket was played. However, the toss has gone up. Australia versus Pakistan. A huge game in this World Cup. And we've got lots of talking points today. Mark Wood saying that Jofra Archer can keep Chris Gayle in check. What a game we have ahead of us there. And of course, these zing bails are being tested back in Australia. So much about these zing bails, but the ICC saying they're not going to change them in this tournament. What do you think about that? And can the Aussies bounce back in today's game? We've got the main man, Dave Richardson from the ICC, who's going to be coming on in a few minutes, which is fantastic, just to talk about his ICC legacy, this World Cup, and some of the issues about the fact that there aren't any reserves days in this English weather. Coming to join me today, obviously, is my co-host, Guy Watts. Great to have you on again today, buddy.
Thanks, Nick. Looking forward to another good one. Yeah, looking forward to speaking to Dave. Looking forward to talking about the weather. We love talking about the weather in England, don't we? And what a brilliant excuse we've had to talk about it with a record third washout. Not what we were hoping for. It's more washouts than we've had at any other World Cup. I was surprised to see, actually, that the record we've beaten isn't our own record from 1999. It's actually South Africa's record and Australia's record from 2003 and 1992, respectively. But, yeah, bit of controversy. I thought Steve Rhodes' comments, the Bangladesh coach, of course, former England player as well, he said, "We've put a man on the moon, so how can we not have reserve days?" Which I sort of see where he's coming from. One seems more difficult than the other, although I don't really see the relevance, to be completely honest with you. I don't quite know why he thinks putting a man on the moon should have anything to do with whether we have reserve days at the Cricket World Cup.
Or we could go with George De Bell's point, saying, "Why can't we get a roof on some of these stadiums? You've spent all this money on the 100 competition. If we hadn't got the 100 competition, maybe we could have an indoor stadium." So there's a lot of conjecture over, obviously, the 100 competition, which is something that the ECB have put in place this year. But of course, yeah, rain is a big problem. It's always been a problem in England. But the tournament is long, so there's a lot of games. Well, and actually, in a way, you kind of counter for the fact that you're going to miss a couple.
You were saying that the tournament's too long, so the easiest way to counter that is just have it rain all the time. You miss half the games, and then Nick Compton doesn't feel like he's having to watch too much cricket. So that could actually be a nice way of making sure that we don't have overkill for
or do the Love Sport cricket show every day. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I'm getting sick of my own voice, aren't I?
Be nice to have some actual cricket to talk about, though. And as you say, we have had a toss down in Taunton, so that is looking pretty promising for a game, or at least some bit of cricket for us to talk about as that goes on. As the show goes on, we'll have updates after half 10, won't we?
Well, listen, I think we should get straight onto it. We're very, very lucky to have former South African cricketer Dave Richardson, of course, chief executive of the ICC. He will be stepping down after 7 years as CEO. Dave, great to have you on this morning.
Yes, thank you, Nick.
Thanks very much. Dave and I caught up at a petrol station recently, which was a good place to start our conversation. But look, Dave, great to have you on. And just a little bit about this World Cup. Obviously, a lot of talk about these bails. I thought I would put you on the spot about them. What can one do? Or are you just going to leave it for this tournament?
We're going to leave it for this tournament. I mean, the fact is that we've used these exact stumps and bails for the last 4 years now.
Okay.
They're not any heavier than they were before. The fact is that the weight of them is slightly heavier than a normal wooden bale that you might use.
Sure.
But lighter than the ones that they use when there's heavy winds. So I think it's sort of a combination of factors. Number one, it's happened an unusual number of times that there's been a slight nick on the stumps. And also a few more times than normal where the ball is sort of rolled onto the stumps and not dislodged bales. But it's really nothing. I don't think it's much to do with the bales themselves. It's more as to how they stick the stumps in the ground in the first place. You can imagine if they put them into the ground with the clay around the stump quite soft, then it doesn't sort of jolt when the stumps get touched and the bale doesn't dislodge. So I think it's more down to that. I've played in a test match where the ball went through the stumps. So these kind of things happened, and without dislodging the bail, these kind of things happen, and I think we're just not making a little bit too much of it. Also, we generally, with the stumps lighting up or the bails lighting up now, every time it does happen, we are aware of it happening, whereas I think before in the past, people would have been none the wiser.
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's a big issue. And the bottom line is it's the same for both teams.
Hit the stumps harder. Hit the middle of the stumps. Dave, you're obviously stepping down after 7 years. I mean, you're a fantastic South African cricketer, one that I watched a lot growing up and what have you. I mean, just a bit about South African cricket. Is it sort of disappointed you to see how they've performed in this World Cup?
Well, yes, I'm still hoping for some sort of miracle, I suppose, and that they win all their remaining games and maybe sneak into the semi-final, similar to the way Pakistan got there in 1992. But, I think it's never one factor. It's a combination of things.
Sure.
Maybe not in 100% certain of the combinations they wanted to go with, in the starting lineup. The injuries to Steyn and then Ngidi after the first game. So everything, and then as soon as you lose a little bit of confidence, then, it's never easy to perform against the top team. So hopefully everything will come together and they'll start to put in a few solid performances, gain some confidence, and then be at their best again very soon.
And in terms of your, I couldn't agree more. In terms of your 7 years, I mean, it's obviously been a really good stint. Are there some great memories? Are there any things that, in terms of your legacy and how you see this World Cup, you know, how does it compare to when you first came in?
I think slowly but surely over the years, our events have got better and better. With more experience, the same people running the events. And going into this one, I was really excited. I thought we were very well prepared. The competition itself is likely to be so competitive with so many teams playing good cricket at the moment. You know, 6 or 7 teams probably challenging for those 4 semi-final places. So really looking forward to the rest of this tournament. Hopefully the weather plays ball and we get celebration of cricket that we talk about will materialize.
No reserve days.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. We haven't had reserve days for the World Cup now, even since 1992, I don't think.
Okay.
And funnily enough, the stat, I remember discussing this at one of our committees, I think it was our cricket committee, whether we should have reserve days in the playing conditions for the round-robin matches. And the stat that was produced was that actually the percentage of washed out matches in the UK is surprisingly low, even lower than the likes of Sri Lanka, South Africa even. And the logistical challenges involved when you do have reserve days for all matches, from a travel point of view, from staffing, from TV crews, everything, hotels, all those arrangements, we really came to the conclusion that, hold on, the benefit of having reserve days in the unlikely event that they are needed just doesn't match the challenges that do exist. But having said that, in retrospect, if we'd known that 3 matches would be washed out and we haven't, not even halfway through the tournament, maybe we would have made a different decision, but that's easy in retrospect.
Yeah, I think grounds and drainage are so good these days in England. I mean, I'll know as a county cricketer, there's nothing better than a washout here and there. We quite enjoyed them, and not of course in the World Cup. And just lastly, I guess there's a little bit of talk about cricket being in the Olympics. Is this something that's been on the tip of your tongue at all? Is that likely to happen?
Yes, very much so. I mean, the decision has been taken that we're going to target cricket in the Olympics.
Great.
For the Los Angeles Games in 2028. It's not a fait accompli. The IOC probably needs some persuading. I think they're quite keen on cricket, but whether the membership vote for it or not is a different matter. There's competition from other sports who are desperate to get into the Olympics. But certainly, India need a little bit of convincing that it's a worthwhile competition to be involved with, but certainly the majority of players, the majority of members all think that cricket in the Olympics will be wonderful for the development and growth of the game. So hopefully 2028, I'm still around to see cricket, both men and women, part of the Olympic Games.
Great. And what's the future for you, Dave, now that you're going to retire after this World Cup?
A little bit of a break. Hopefully come back to the UK in March, April next year, and hopefully with a bit of luck, maybe find a role somewhere in the game, county cricket or wherever.
Great.
Nothing concrete at this point in time, but keen to just stay in the game for a little bit longer it's been my life. I've enjoyed it thoroughly, and a little bit too soon to just sit and do nothing.
Of course, mate. Well, listen, thanks thanks so much for coming on and clarifying a few things for us. It's been great to have you on, Dave, and looks like there is going to be some play down at Taunton. Wazim Akram is currently talking. I think they Pakistanis won the toss, I think, there, Guy. I think they're going to probably have a bowl, I would have thought, and a place I obviously know very well. But great to hear Dave Richardson's thoughts there.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm really excited about the prospect of cricket getting to the Olympics. I think it's always exciting when you get new sports in. I think a lot of us were a little bit, you know, surprise, shocked, maybe even more extreme words than that when we heard about things like breakdancing were going to be in the Olympics. You've got a great sport like cricket that I think could really expand its kind of global appeal by, you know, being on that global stage. And I think that the point is with cricket, there's a lot of countries that are really good at cricket that aren't that good at other sports. So it'd be a massive deal. For example, for India, you know, they don't win loads and loads of Olympic medals. And we saw like with Fiji in the Olympic sevens, and in the rugby sevens rather, at the last Olympics, they went absolutely mad for it. And I think they would really add something to the Olympics. So I really like the idea of it coming in, even if it's going to take another few years.
Cricket in the Olympics. Come on, let's get it up. Up next, we'll be hearing from David Lloyd. Yes, that's Bumble, the funny man to you and me. He was on our breakfast show earlier today talking about the Bales fiasco at this World Cup.
Love Sport.
Just getting carried away with watching the prelude to this big game up at Taunton. Of course, we've got Pakistan versus Australia in Somerset at Taunton, one of the flatter wickets. And I have to attest to saying I do miss batting there because it is a fantastic play of cricket. And look, I think more than just the cricket match, it's such a big occasion for Taunton. I know they've been, when I was down there, they were working on getting Category B status, which means to be able to host a one-day international game, which they've obviously done over the last few years. But now to have a World Cup cricket match at Somerset, I can't speak higher for the people down there, the passion that they have for cricket, and of course, following their pride in the Somerset team. But I think it's such a big occasion. And you know, I think if there's going to be a big score or a record run score, I think it could be at this ground, Guy.
It's a shame the weather's not better, isn't it? Because that is exactly what I think a lot of people had in mind. You were literally going through the fixture list, looking at which games were at Taunton, thinking, is it going to be 500? You know, are the teams involved capable of getting there? And, well, look, it's not impossible. Australia are going to be batting first. Pakistan have chosen to bowl. They've obviously got a brilliant batting lineup. It's not impossible, but it would be a surprise given the conditions today. It's also not just, you know, a great ground and a great county with a load of great people, but it's also considered, isn't it, one of the most beautiful places to play cricket or watch cricket anywhere in the world. We're looking at the TV. You've got Taunton Cathedral in the background, and you've got the lovely sight of Ian Ward, Michael Clarke, and Wazim Akram in front of them as well. And it's a great place
well,
to
mate,
watch.
I had 5 days. Five days, that's a test match. I had 5 years down there, yeah. And a fantastic 5 years. I mean, I definitely enjoyed batting down there, I'll say that. That's what I probably missed the most. The cider, maybe a little bit, the odd cider here and there. But I think fundamentally, it's just nice to be in a place where cricket's really appreciated. I mean, sometimes, you know, the playing at Lord's and playing at some of these bigger grounds is as fantastic as it is as an experience. But when you're at Somerset and you're at Taunton and you've got a full house, you know, with 7,000 or 8,000 people, it's a fantastic feeling. The lights come on, the sun's out, and hopefully the sun will come through later on. But, you know, watching Michael Clarke talk here, I think it is a big game for Australia.
Yeah.
They've kind of done okay. They've done well. I think there's been some good bowling performances, as we expected, from the likes of Stark and some of their quicks. Their batting's not really fired.
I wanted to talk about this because Michael Vaughan, not normally shy of an opinion, he says that Australia are playing one day cricket from 25 years ago. And I have to say, I know where he's coming from. And it's interesting to see there's a change in their team today. Marcus Stoinis, we know, is struggling with an injury. Mitch Marsh has flown over as potential cover if Stoinis has to pull out. It means Sean Marsh, Mitch's brother, has come into the team. Now, he has played brilliantly in one day internationals in the last year or two. There's no question about that. But I look at a middle order of Usman Khawaja, Steve Smith, Sean Marsh, and I think, are you playing a test match here, guys? You know, that is not the sort of middle order that is going to get you, forget 500, I don't think that gets you very near 400 unless Finch or Warner do something special at the top.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you do. I mean, Alex Carey, I think, is quite an exciting player, and Glenn Maxwell.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I'm not too, you know, Sean Marsh has been a very successful player in the T20s and in both the IPL and on the global stage, as has Usman Khawaja. I mean, these guys aren't blockers, you know, and I hear Michael's views. I think, you know, if you look at other teams, I mean, Aaron Finch and David Warner would probably be equivalent to Jason Roy and Johnny Bairstow. You hope that they get going. Usman Khawaja and Joe Root. You know, Joe Root's not a guy that's going to, you know, take
be explosive,
the
yeah.
be explosive and take the world on. So I suppose you look at those two. Steve Smith, I mean, he scores quickly enough. You know, I mean, I know he is probably more in the Joe Root mold of holding the team together, but I would say he's probably a little bit more explosive. Can get going. And then you've got Glenn Maxwell and Alex Carey. So, you know, Sean Marsh has played a lot of T20 cricket. These guys can get going. So, you know, he averages 41, we'll say over 41 in one day international. He's got a strike rate of 81, 82. I think maybe coming in at number five will give him a little bit more freedom to potentially sort of express himself. And I actually think that's a better batting lineup. I really do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Sean Marsh is a good player, and I think he's the kind of guy that's been unlucky to miss out, you know. But he seems a bit inconsistent at top of the order, and I think this is a good chance for Australia to really exert some sort of dominance, batting dominance on this tournament. You know, we know they've got Stark Cummins. They've gone with Kane Richardson and Nathan Coulter-Nile. Probably the two areas, Guy, that I would say, if there is a sort of hole in Australia's kind of, you know, attack or should we say sort of makeup, I would probably say it's the third seamer.
Yeah, okay, but we're talking a lot about Taunton, and the one aspect of it we haven't mentioned really is its nickname. You referred to the side as Hyderabad, you know, and it has been famous for the way it takes spin. Obviously, it's been a great place for potential young England spinners to kind of learn their trade and gain their confidence and stuff. And we're seeing an Australia team, not only have they changed Marsh in for Stoinis, but Kane Richardson has come in there for Adam Zampa. So they haven't got a single front line spinner. That's asking a lot of Glenn Maxwell.
It is asking a lot of Glenn Maxwell. It's a tricky one to work through. I would say to people that in four-day cricket, the pitches that have been there very much conducive to spin. There's been a lot of turn there. That Jack Leach, who's played for England and done so well, he's come through the ranks there. But if I'm really honest, I think these one-day pitches have been pretty placid, have been pretty flat. And, you know, I remember playing there with Kieran Pollard, the big hitting West Indian. And I mean, I was standing at the other end and the spinner came on. I remember thinking, oh dear, you know, the spinner's going to go. And he went into the river three times, you know. Ball anywhere near in your arc, it is such a small ground straight that it is a huge risk. And a guy like Adam Zampa could really get taken down. But it is a risk. It is a risk. Maybe they felt that with a bit of the rain that's been around for the last 2 days, the fact that it is overcast this morning, that perhaps they were sort of almost going to not hedge their bets, go, you know what, we're going to make a decision here. We're going to go in with our quicks and we're going to expect them to win us the game. And, you know, I think also the other point to bring up is the West Indies bowled out Pakistan very cheaply in the first game. And if there is a weakness, you know, or say if there is a strength, Pakistan probably plays spin quite well. So they just thought that maybe they are putting all their eggs in one basket, though.
Yeah, they are. And I would say that while that did happen in the first game, as England fans, we got really excited. We were like, oh, we've got the two quickest bowlers in the tournament. We're going to bounce them out even cheaper. And no, what did they go and do? They racked up 350. So I get where you're coming from, and I think that will have been part of the Australian thinking. I just think that they and every other team has to be so careful they don't take this Pakistan team for granted, because yes, on a bad day, they're as bad as anyone. They're probably worse than Sri Lanka, but on a good day, this team beat the favourites, beat England, you know, and they could quite easily beat Australia today. That top three, I seriously think it's almost as good as any in the tournament, Pakistan's, you know, and Babar, Imam Ul Haq and Fakhar Zaman. They're seriously good players. And if they're not given a really big score to chase today, Pakistan, I think they'll fancy it.
Yep, I absolutely agree. And look, a guy that knows all about playing against Pakistan, I think he's had some good returns against them, is the international cricketer Tim Murtagh and good mate from Middlesex. We're going to be chatting to him after the break.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, welcome back to Love Sport Radio. I'm Nick Compton, and we're watching the two teams. Pakistan are walking out against Australia at Taunton. What a showcase game this is for Somerset. A huge occasion for them. Someone who knows about bowling at Taunton, though, and probably doesn't enjoy it very much, is a good former teammate, Tim Murtagh. He's sitting in his hotel room. Are you still watching it rain there, Tim?
It's actually stopped raining for a change, but yeah, the whole of Leicester's pretty much underwater, so we haven't had much cricket here for 2 days.
You're going well this year, mate. You've been taking a few wickets.
Yeah, going well. Still enjoying the game at ripe old age of 37. You know, missing having you in the dressing room, obviously.
Of course.
Just a bit of banter and stuff, but, you know...
I'm not sure you miss me that much, let's be honest.
Where's that gone, Nick?
No, that's true, yeah.
Mate, you've missed all of it. I've left all the banter for this radio station. mate, just, you know, obviously you've had, about 2 years now playing for Ireland. It's been a sort of resurgence of your career, and I'm sure I'd like to hear more about that. But obviously disappointing sitting on your hotel room and watching this World Cup and thinking, well, hang on a minute, you know, we've had some good results against some of these teams. And, you know, did you feel how do you feel about not playing in this World Cup? It's obviously quite hard to take.
Yeah, gutted. I mean, we sort of played a qualifier tournament in March last year. We kind of had our chance to qualify, and it came down to us and Afghanistan in a kind of final playoff game for the last spot, and we unfortunately didn't turn up on that day. And credit to Afghanistan, they've been a strong team for a number of years now. So it is disappointing. I think there's space, you know, for perhaps two more teams in the World Cup. I think having the likes of ourselves, possibly Zimbabwe, possibly Scotland, would have just added to the kind of colour of the tournament. So, yeah, we're obviously disappointed. It would have been a fantastic one to play, obviously being in England and that. So, yeah, it is a shame. It's kind of, we're enjoying watching it, but yeah, would have been nice to have been involved.
What have you made of it so far? Have you managed to watch a few games? And you know, who's sort of the favourites for you at the moment?
Yeah, I've watched. We sort of, it's on in the background in dressing rooms, and you kind of watch bits here and there. I just think India looked the strongest to me. I know that's a fairly obvious call, but I just think they've got so many sort of big game players who have played a lot of big games in IPLs and for India throughout the years. So I think they've got kind of all bases covered with bowling, batting, and even in the field as well. So I think it's difficult. I think I'd like to see an England-India final. I think maybe India might edge it, but we'll see.
Tim, obviously a county teammate of yours, Owen Morgan, is leading England, doing a brilliant job of it by everyone's account, really. Could have been an international teammate of yours for the last couple of years. How does it feel watching an Irishman, you know, someone who has played for Ireland, obviously speaks with an Irish accent, all that sort of thing, leading England, potentially captaining England to
I mean, can't you hear Tim's Irish accent, mate? I thought you'd put your Irish accent on for the show, surely.
Well, that's what happened. You see, I think Ireland got the better deal because they got me and obviously lost Owen, and England have had to, you know, take Owen and lose me. So
Tim, I'd swap.
I think Ireland definitely got the best deal there.
Anyone listening out there don't know what it's like facing Tim Murtagh on a green one at the start of the season. There is nothing worse, and no one I would rather have in my team than you, mate.
It's funny, we can't actually get someone with the accent you'd expect on the show. We've got England cricketer Nick Compton with the South African accent. We had Sam Robson on yesterday, former England batsman, as Aussie as they come. Tim Mercer, the Ireland bowler. So yeah, it's all sorts of surprises.
It's a multicultural game these days.
Talk us through what's going on. It's been washed out for 2 days. I mean, we've watched 2 days here at the World Cup be washed out. What do you guys get up to when this happens? I mean, what goes on?
Interestingly, there's a kind of different divide. The older guys sort of like to sit down, read the paper, catch up on some box sets, maybe. The younger guys went to Laser Quest in Leicester yesterday and had an afternoon in Laser Quest. I mean, it's very wet here. I've never seen so much rain for 2 or 3 days. We're at the hotel still waiting for any word from the ground.
Buzzing, so, though. I mean, sound very excited.
I'm full of energy, halfway through a four-day game, which isn't the norm, so... There's plenty of things to keep us occupied. I think we might pop off and play some snooker this afternoon if we get called off. So we'll see what happens.
Rock and roll stuff. Tim, I wanted to ask you about England's bowling attack. Obviously, Jofra Archer and Mark Wood have really sort of hit their straps with their speeds, hitting 95 miles an hour. We've all loved watching it.
Yeah.
But on a serious note, do you actually see them both playing as England's most potent bowling attack, or do we have other bowlers who give us a bit more variation that you'd rather see us play in tandem?
Oh, it's difficult to say. I think similar to India, they've got a lot of bases covered. They've got that pace. I think that's kind of working quite well for them. They're obviously both bowling, you know, fast at the moment, and it's important to have that kind of in one-day cricket, even in those middle overs, just a bit of extra pace just to sort of try and take wickets. And, you know, Jofra looks like he's kind of played 100 ODIs and 20 test matches. He looks, you know, the real deal already, so... I think that's very exciting for them. If they can keep those two fit throughout the whole tournament, you know, that'll be a massive boost for them. But similarly, if they come up on a slower wicket that might nibble around a bit, they've got, you know, other guys who can do a job as well. So I think it's a great position for them to be in, obviously, and have that kind of depth of bowling options.
I guess the only point is you want to make sure that come the semi-final, you're pretty clear. I mean, we all know what it's like being in a team where you're not quite sure. And I think it's all about timing, really, isn't it? Because I've got the likes of Mo and Ali, who didn't play the last game, and Liam Plunkett, who's been so important to this England team, particularly in those middle overs. And you don't just want to suddenly get rid of that, despite the excitement around Archer and Wood. You know, I think you've still got to find that winning sort of momentum, haven't you?
I agree, and it's, as you say, it's a long tournament, so I think they're going to need their squad players. I think everyone's going to play a part throughout the squad, and you know, there'll be some disappointed guys who do get left out of that final 11 whenever they play, but you know, you'd rather that than just have a bare kind of 11 or 12 names that you're kind of relying on and want to play. So there will be a sense of fatigue. I'm sure there'll be some injuries that may sort of come into it as you go throughout the tournament. So I think to have everyone playing and sort of ready to go is also not a bad thing as well.
Great, mate. And just a little bit about you, just to finish off, how many more years have you got in that body of yours?
Five or six
more years? 45 years old, will we still see you putting the whites on?
If it keeps raining as much as this, I could go for another few years, definitely. But no, it's a kind of year-by-year thing at the moment. I'd like to play for another year next year, and at the end of this season, I can't play for Middlesex and Ireland. I have to make a decision in that regard. So there are kind of conversations going on, and we'll see what happens at the end of the season.
Well, I know what a passionate man you are and how proud you are of being Irish. So I'm sure that'd be a very tough decision for you, mate. But it's no, look, I know you're missing my banter hugely. So don't send my regards to all the boys in the changing room. Hope you get on and take some more wickets this year, mate. Great having you on.
Thanks, buddy. Good to chat to you.
Brilliant.
It'd be nice to actually speak to an international player who has the accent you expect at some point. But look, we've got plenty more weeks of this World Cup still to come, loads more games, so I'm sure it'll happen at some point.
Well, we're talking about the bad boys of cricket next. Not that I put myself in that category, of course, but Ben Stokes says he'll never be an angel. Love Sport. Yes, it's Nick Compton here, live on Love Sport Radio. We've just listened to Tim Murta, the Irish and Middlesex bowler. Having a bit of banter with him is always good, listening to him watching the rain. But it's not raining down in Taunton, a place I know well. Of course, Pakistan have won the toss. They're bowling. Mohammad Amir has just bowled the first over. Very good first over, I have to say. A little bit of swing. Quite a watchful Aaron Finch, who's got naught off the first six deliveries. So he's quite watchful. But I do expect it to really get going. I think it's the type of wicket that will get flatter. We're talking about bad boys, though. Bad boys of cricket. And one of them who's just taking strike at the moment, could be argued, is David Warner. We do love a bit of David Warner. He's got a few boos, and there's boos going around the grounds at the moment. But look, he's no doubt a fantastic player. And I think, you know, talking about these bad boys and what have you, but David is a fantastic player. And I think he's somebody that could potentially light up this tournament.
Yeah, he could potentially. But I would argue he's going to have to be a bit of a different player to the one we've seen in the first two games. I know he's actually made some runs, and in particular a big score against Afghanistan, but the half century made in the last game against India, that was
very
slowest
in
ODIs, and he's got a lot of half centuries to choose from. So that, I would say, is worrying. Aaron Finch, his captain, is trying to argue he's back to his dangerous best, but I really don't think we've seen that. You know, he got a lot of runs in the IPL, played a couple of destructive innings with Johnny Bairstow at the top of the order for the Sunrisers, and you know, looked kind of back to his best there. But at the World Cup, he's looked inhibited. And I think he is playing a bit selfishly, because I think he's so worried about trying to show people he's still the batsman he was at the international level, that he's more worried about making scores than he has actually been about contributing to the team total. He batted way too slowly against
him. Maybe. I think in another way, it's quite easy to be critical. I think every new tournament starts and finishes, and I think every inning starts and finishes, and it sounds rather cliched and boring, but as an opening batter, you want to get yourself into a tournament, and the last thing you want to do is play a couple of, you know, poor shots as he just clips one off his hip there for four. So he is in more aggressive mode. David Warner's four off two deliveries, a strike rate at a whopping 200.
He's going to make a ton, isn't he?
This is a changed man. But look, if you're going to have a high strike rate, let me tell you right now, Taunton is the place to do it. It's small, the outfield's quick, and even I've managed to get it off the square a few times there. So trust me, I've got it off the square there. So look, I think this looks like potential ominous signs, but the ball is seeming around. There is a bit of movement. So Pakistan will want to make hay While the sun shines, but while it's overcast.
I will just give you, we'll talk bad boys in a set. I'll give you a quick weather update. Of course, we do like our weather on the cricket show. It looks reasonably promising in that there's going to be some showers around, but I think we're going to get a completed game in that there's going to be a result. You know, it may not be 50 overs, but there's not heavy rain forecast down in Taunton at any point during the next few hours. So all the way through until this evening, until 7 or 8 tonight, it's only going to be 14 or 15 degrees. These guys are going to be seriously wondering where the English summer has gone. But yeah, it should be not a third no result in a row, which is music to all of our ears. But yeah, David Warner has moved on to 5, Australia 5 for none after 1.5 overs. By the way, Pakistan have got surely one of the most heavy left arm seam attacks in, you know, in cricket history. Wahab Riaz, Shaheen Afridi and Mohammad Amir all there to choose from. That's either going to go one way or the other, isn't it? They're either going to have success through that, or they're going to get their iron early to those left armers and make hay. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how
well
it
it's
goes.
All about variation, and it's probably one thing England don't have, not playing David Willey in this tournament. Very unlucky to have potentially missed out. Doesn't quite have the pace of a Wahab Riaz or the other sort of the other Pakistan left armers. You're obviously a little bit quicker, Mohammad Amir, etc. But that variation is very important. But I suppose if they're all left armers, it's not much variation.
Well, exactly,
then, is it?
It becomes the norm. But yeah, David Warner and the booing. Obviously, it was Steve Smith who got more scrutiny in the India game because he was getting booed on the boundary. Virat Kohli said that basically the India fans should stop booing. I think we can actually hear Aaron Finch talking about the booing that some of his teammates have been getting.
Regardless of whether they get booed or cheered, it doesn't faze them too much. I know talking to them, it's a part of the game, unfortunately, that it's going to keep coming up. So sometimes it's best to just not poke the bear, but we know it's going to happen.
Talking about booing, I mean, look, Aaron Finch's comments, they're pretty predictable in the sense that, you know, we have spoken about it, but and I've got to say, some of the comments that I've received after having, I wouldn't say a pop at Virat Kohli at all, but I think it's a point that has been brought up in the show, and it's something that has been quite prevalent in this tournament. You know, Virat Kohli sort of notably telling fans to stop booing Steve Smith and rather clap them, and I sort of said I found it a little bit condescending. It's taking nothing away from Virat Kohli as a captain, a player, a leader, etc. However, I do feel that fans have the right to make their own decisions. They've paid the money, they've come into the ground, and if they want to sing, laugh, dance, boo, I suppose it's up to them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And, you know, I don't think that you ask many sports fans, football, cricket, whatever, if you ask them if they think it's going to make a serious difference. They're not doing it, I don't think, because they think it's going to make Steve Smith help him make a duck or, you know, get out in the single figures. They're doing it because they get a bit of a kick out of it. And it may not be mature, it may not be something that they're particularly proud of, especially once they've sobered up or whatever. But you know what? They're doing it because they're there to enjoy it. And it happens in football as well, happens in cricket loads. England versus Australia is part of what we love. And if that's what the Indian fans want to do, the English fans want to do, I don't want to be told by Kohli or Owen Morgan or Joe Root or anyone else what to do while I'm at the cricket. If I want to do it, I should be able to do it. But yeah, of course, Virat Kohli did get a lot of praise for that overall. I think we're in a minority here.
Yeah, a lot of passionate Indian supporters who didn't like my comments, which is fine, absolutely fine. I'm sort of used to that. But
they're a bit protective, aren't they?
They are very protective. Virat Kohli's a fantastic player, but it doesn't matter whether he's captain or he's another cricketer. His job is to go and bat and score runs, and I think that's obviously what he does very well. But to tell fans, I just found it slightly elitist, if I'm honest with you, to stop booing and to stop and telling them, sort of gesturing the clapping sign towards Steve Smith. I know if I was in the crowd, I'd be thinking, I'll do what I want, thank you.
And I'd have actually felt a bit condescended as Steve Smith. I know they had a little handshake afterwards, but I think he'd have been a little bit embarrassed almost to have like his opposite number looking out for him like that. You know, he's not his mentor, he's not his dad, he's an opposition player and he's the opposition's best player.
Especially when the team beats you, you know, exactly. It's almost like, yeah, cheers, mate, but you know, let's just win this game, you know. I mean, would it be different if Virat Kohli was out for naught and the team were getting thumped?
Exactly.
Would he have really been the, you know, the great bloke who was trying to do the right thing? I don't know. It's, you know, again, it's not a conversation that we're not trying to get into it in terms of trying to displace Virat Kohli as a cricketer. But I just think, you know, fans will make their decision, and I think at the end of the day, Steve Smith and David Warner are going to cop it for a while. They know they're going to have to soak it up a little bit. Eventually, the storm will weather, and people get bored of it, and we'll go back to normal. But that's what's going to happen right now.
Exactly. They're going to make runs as well. I think that's what we've all got to accept because they're such good players. And we started off trying to talk about bad boys, and obviously we're talking about David Warner, but we've got a list here.
We've got a long list, mate. Not a small list. We've got a long list. I mean,
we could do a whole show, couldn't we?
Well, let's just go through them. Andrew Symons, the Australian, the most controversial player in cricket sport. Well, that's a big statement there. He's done a few things in his life. David Boone, who loved a beer. There's absolutely no doubt. Fantastic player, though, I've got to say. He was the Tasmanian you most fondly remember for achieving consuming 52 cans of beer on Australia's flight over to the UK.
That number changes every time I hear that story. So it's a 24-hour flight, isn't it? And I heard that originally that it was a 24 cans that he did. It was like one per hour. And now it's 52.
Well, mate, I have two cans of beer and I'm on the floor. So, you know, let's just say that me and David Boone are never going to be drinking partners.
Number
put it
nine,
that way.
Nick Compton once had two cans of beer on the way to Pakistan. Oh, no.
Into Mamul Haq. I mean, what a great player. He was once called a fat potato, which he didn't like, and he finally walked into the crowd. We're giving him a right old rollicking, so that was great. And who else have we got? Ian Botham, well, the greatest England all-rounder. What a great man he is. But he's no doubt there's been a few controversies surrounding him. He's bringing the game into disrepute by using cannabis in 1986. Well, just
do you think
people
actually
use it now to chill out then, don't they?
On that, though,
it's been legalised in some places.
Well, it has. And on that note, because Ben Stokes has been talking this week, hasn't he? He's been saying how, yeah, he's learned from the Bristol incident, but he's never going to be an angel. And I think there will be some people who go, that's ridiculous. He should be making sure he never puts a foot wrong. But in Stokes and Botham, and to a degree Freddie Flintoff as well, you have really exuberant characters, guys who have made mistakes in public. Is there something about being an all-rounder, do you think, that makes you more likely to be the sort of person that might get into a bit of a scrape off the field?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, Ben Stokes, let me say one thing about Ben Stokes. He's a consummate professional. He's a fantastic guy. He's a very friendly guy in the change room. I think he's very popular, and he works damn hard at his game. Now, I think, look, his personality is slightly instinctive, but do we want to take that away from him? Of course we don't. We want to keep that in there. I think we should discuss this a little bit more. We've got a lot more of these bad boys of cricket. Do stay tuned to talk more about the legend that is Ben Stokes.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, Love Sport Radio. Aaron Finch, the Australian, has just deposited Shaheen into the stands at Somerset, although it's not a big hit, but Australia well on their way, 18 for no wicket. We are talking about bad boys of cricket. One is batting at the moment, David Warner, who seems to be getting all the raps. But I'm delighted to be joined by my first Middlesex coach, John Embery, and great off-inning England off-spinner, who's on the line. Embers, we're talking about bad boys of cricket. Ian Botham is seventh on the list. Do you think you're sort of lucky to not be on that top 10? Maybe top 20? What do you think?
For doing what? For going to South Africa?
Maybe. I don't know. I was hoping you were going to unearth some truths that we haven't heard before.
No, I don't think so. No, I went on the Mike Gatting trip in 82 and then, sorry, Graham Gooch and then in 82 and then Mike Gatting in 1990. Obviously, when we went in 1982, we didn't realise that we would be banned until we were midway through the first game up in Pretoria, which was a huge disappointment to everyone because we felt that we had done nothing wrong. And in fact, I still now don't think that we did anything wrong in going to South Africa.
Still some of the best cricket you played, though. Worth it?
Well, certainly not in the first one because I busted my thumb in the second game that I played. So I didn't take part in any of the unofficial tests as such against South Africa, which would have been a shame because South Africa were a very strong side at the time and it would have been great to have played against them.
John, what have you made of England at this tournament so far? Obviously, two wins, one defeat to Pakistan. Overall, good performances, though. A lot of talk about the bowling attack. I feel like even the team management themselves don't quite know what the best 11 is when it comes to making up that bowling attack. Who have you been most impressed by? Who can't we leave out going forward? And who is knocking hardest at the door to get in?
Well, to be honest with you, in any tournament that you enter, you play your best 11 players. Mm. And the other guys have just got to wait. When you're talking about who are our best 11 players, well, I think our first seven sort themselves out. Moeen Ali got left out of the last game, more so because I think of the pitch conditions, a little bit of grass on the pitch, and they felt that he probably wouldn't. And his batting is struggling a little bit. I think there's a lot of talk about whether it should be Wood or whether it should be Plunkett.
Yeah,
Archer has definitely got to play.
Okay,
you're looking at Adil Rashid, and really you could perm the others, but I would play Plunkett because I think he's done very well. So you've got Archer, Plunkett, you've got Rashid. You've got to have Moeen Ali in your squad. You've already got Ben Stokes in the squad that's a seamer that he's not really being used or.
Chris
and then
Wokes.
You've got a choice between Wokes and Wood. Wokes has gone for a few runs in the matches that he's played so far, and you could see that as a weakness. But then again, he's come in at the back end of the innings and he's smashed it around a little bit. So, you know, there is some worth there. And England, do enjoy going into these one-day games with, I wouldn't say a balanced side, but a well-rounded side with a lot of depth in terms of batting and all-rounders, which you can't complain with that too much because they've been very successful in series at home and overseas. But I think I've hit the nail on the head when I say series. We've managed to get through series and win them over three or five games. But in this World Cup, and they're one-off games in this league format, it's more difficult.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? I mean, how did you find it playing, coming into a tournament like the World Cup? Was it? Did you feel the extra pressure?
No, not necessarily. As an individual, no. I think the thoughts that you're in a tournament, you could be knocked out of it, and it has such relevance being every 4 years. I think that matters to the individual more than anything else. I mean, I only played one World Cup, and I missed four others. So, I missed two of those because of bans, and one I didn't get selected in. So, that was a huge disappointment for me at the time. But having got through to the final in Calcutta against Australia, to lose that game was a massive disappointment.
Yeah, John. Well, I know that over the years I've picked up so much from you, particularly coming in as a youngster in the Middlesex ranks and of course watching you bowl on the nets. You're still probably the best off spinner out there, mate. Look, talking about the tournament after the World Cup, obviously it's great if England go on to win this, but obviously the Ashes. Now, look, a little bit about Test cricket and where do England go with their Test team? I know there's been a lot of talk about Roy potentially coming in. Are you an advocate of someone like him earning a call into the Test team?
Well, I think he's got to get some runs. And the thing about that, if he comes in, is he going to be batting in the top three? And I say that because he bats down the order for Surrey. He bats at five or whatever for Surrey. And I think that, you know, we're playing against Australia. They're a top team. They've got a great bowling attack in terms of seamers with Stark, Cummins, Hazelwood. You've got Nathan Lyon. It's a crackerjack side. And whether they play Stoinis or Mitch Marsh in the middle order as an all-rounder, they're a very, very competitive side, and they're going to cause us huge problems. Nathan Lyon, to me, is the best finger spinner in world cricket, and it amazes me that Australia don't pick him in their World Cup side over here at the moment. They're sticking with Zampa, but I would go along with Lyon, but I'm sort of going off track there a little bit. Nice. It's going to be a very tough series at home against Australia. They're a very good side. Warner and Smith come back. They've been both been very successful against England. And I think the series taking place later in the summer when the pitches are going to be a lot drier would suit Australia as well, where there's going to be less movement off the pitch, which would challenge their techniques a little bit because they don't have a lot of foot movement. And I'm watching the replays on the television now of their playing and missing.
good leaves from our bench.
There isn't a lot of foot movement from those Australian players. And if the pitches don't move so much, then it's going to be hard work for the England bowlers, I think.
John, you just sort of referred to the television footage there. Obviously, we're all lucky enough to be watching on Sky. I read the other day Johnny Bairstow saying he barely watched any of the World Cup because he doesn't have Sky, which surprised me a little bit. But there's a lot of debate going on about whether or not we're making the most of this opportunity of having the home World Cup. Obviously, the Ashes coming up as well. A brilliant summer for all of us cricket fans. But you know, you'll remember the 1999 World Cup well. It was a good World Cup overall, a bad one for England, though. But are you worried at all that it's maybe passing us by, that enough people aren't engaged? Or is the combination of social media and a lot of the media obviously focusing on the Cricket World Cup at the moment going to be enough to make sure that it's a success this year?
Well, actually, it's an interesting one because Sky TV have the World Cup on television, but they're not the host broadcasters. They're just it's the company that Sunset and Vine who are the company, the production company that picked up the World Cup. They're the ones that have used Sky. I don't know what the financial arrangements of that is, but it's an ICC tournament. It's not an English tournament. So that's an interesting one. So any negotiations would be taken with the ICC and television broadcasting.
It's a shame, really, though, isn't it, John? Because you sort of think it's a home. It is an English World Cup. I mean, it fundamentally takes away the point of having it in England. Then, I mean, you know, surely there should be an engagement with the local public. You know, and that's where the legacy of having a World Cup in England comes, isn't it?
Well, perhaps the BBC, ITV, ITV4, whatever, should put more effort, or Eurosport, or whatever, put more. Sorry, not Eurosport. Put more effort into trying to engage that World Cup then. I think for many years when Test match cricket was on the BBC, if I wasn't able to watch it, if I was working during the daytime or my father was working during the daytime, the highlights came on at 11:30 in the evening for about half an hour. All you saw was fours and sixes and wickets go down. All it was is entertainment. You didn't see any sort of passage of play or intriguing session, parts of sessions. So therefore, you know, you go back on terrestrial TV, and obviously when Channel 4 had it, they had it on live and they showed highlights a lot earlier, which was great. But I think, to be honest with you, I think when the BBC had it for all those years, they didn't help the game at all. Whereas, right, I think Sky, when they came along, they brought cricket. I think they have. They brought cricket onto our screens in the winter. They've pumped a lot of money into the game as well. A lot of that's gone into players' pockets, as it does in the soccer as well. It's a difficult one to get right.
Sure.
Yes, children want to watch it because they have to expand the game through television, through media. And to me, that's obviously very important.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. No,
it's a difficult one.
It is a difficult one. John, just to talk, I know it's something that's on the newspapers today, is sort of this article about Robin Smith, obviously a guy that I'm sure you played against, and a fantastic guy, but obviously not nice to read some of the article about, you know, what he's gone through, and we all know how tough it is when you retire, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when Robin went to Australia, he had a few issues here in England, and I know that he's had a drink problem, which he's sort of overcome, and he's met another lady, and that's helped him greatly. I haven't read the article that's in the press at the moment, so I don't know too much about what Robin's state is now, and hopefully he's getting through it. He certainly was a couple of years ago when I saw him in Australia.
Yeah.
But it's a long road back for people that suffer from possibly a little bit of depression, and things are not going well for you. You're not generating income. You've represented your country, and although you can't take it for granted that you're going to be looked after, I don't think that the England cricket team at the time were paid particularly well. And unless you invested your money wisely. And Robin's still of working age. It's not as though you can dip into your pension. Again, it's a difficult one, and they just need support, like all of these people that suffer from these from depression and having these problems with drink or drugs. I think the Professional Cricket Association does a fantastic job in that.
The PCA do a great job with that. Well, look, John, it's been great having you on, mate, and I look forward to catching up with you at Lord's and getting some more thoughts on this Cricket World Cup. Guy, just wrapping that up in terms of the mental health side of things, very difficult. I can attest to having retired last year, and you know, it does throw up all sorts of thoughts. You know, it's something, you know, what you talk, I read an art, one of the comments there, you know, I woke up at 5 a.m. every morning, Robin said. My dad woke me up at 5 a.m. on the bowling machine to hit 300 balls before school every day. Suddenly you wake up and there's no 5 a.m. and you know, and it takes away a huge amount from your life.
The problem is that kind of lifestyle probably isn't particularly healthy, but while you're doing it and you're used to it, you probably don't think about it that much. It's just what you do and it's what defines you, and obviously you'll be able to relate directly to it. It's what defines you, and then suddenly you're not doing it anymore, and it must be really, really difficult to come to terms with. Michael Clarke, done an interview as well. He's doing a lot with Movember now, the mental health charity down in Australia, and you know, obviously he had the Philip Hughes tragedy as well. Really, really sad, serious stuff, but it's important and it's vital that we talk about it, and it's good to see, you know, these guys opening up and sharing their own experiences. Meanwhile, down at Taunton, 29 for none, Australia after six overs. Mohammad Amir has bowled brilliantly. Three overs, none for four, although he's just been hit for four by David Warner. And at the other end, Shaheen Afridi went for 24 from his two overs. So Mohammad Amir probably fuming at his opening partner.
Yeah, I think Pakistan have missed an opportunity here. I really do. I mean, I think there's always more pressure on opening bowlers here, especially when there's an opportunity like there is this morning. It's swinging. There's a bit of mist and dew around. The pitch has got, it looks a little bit damp, so there is opportunity there, but they haven't bowled the right length. There's no doubt that they've missed that length, and we're going to have to wrap up because it's the end of another great show. We'll, of course, come back to see tomorrow who's won this game. Goodbye.